show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's starting to wind down on the season here. We have the Royals, and they are cruising towards an ultimate mathematical elimination from the division. Could be tonight, and the playoffs soon to follow. However, before we get into that, introductions, I am, of course, Jeff Hur, and with me, as always, the... I'm like the Royals tonight with my Michael Engel adjective, so...
just out of it. Just
yes,
completely just, wiped out of any of them.
Yes, I am mathematically... That's what I should have done. I should have made like a fun riff off mathematically, not mathematically eliminated Michael Engel. We'll just edit the rest out and we'll put that part. How about that?
I'm not going to edit that.
Yeah, I know.
Stand.
But anyway, so as we stand, the Royals, I mean, they're just, I guess we can start with last night. So last week we spent an awful lot of time talking about Joaquin Soria and what just kind of, you know, everything that's gone on with him this season and his struggles that he's had and what it's meant for the team and all that kind of stuff. And then he comes in last night, gives up more runs. The Royals lose in the bottom of the ninth to the Cleveland Indians. And it's just kind of, I mean, we obviously spent a lot of time on last week, so we don't need to talk necessarily about Soria that much, but just kind of one point to hit on. I mean, you just chalk this up as a lost season, or are you concerned for the next 2 years of the contract on Soria?
Well, he's not getting any younger, so I think that's cause for concern. I think there are some people that I saw on Twitter and I think even on Facebook that were like, hey, you know, put him out there, make him, you know, let him figure it out, gain some confidence in these tough situations. But, you know, at this stage, if he's going out there, he knows like what he's done. And, like last night, apparently he waved off reporters because he just didn't want to be interviewed. And I don't think that's ever been a thing that's happened with him. I mean, maybe it has and it just didn't stand out, but you know, that's usually when he's made these, you know, these difficult losses, when he's given up runs, he's at least talked to them. And, you know, last night he just, you know, it's like nothing. So I'm sure he's tired of just thinking about it. Just in general, you know, just you think yeah. about how bad the stretch has been over the last 3 weeks for him. And I'd be just, you know, annoyed by having to answer the same questions, especially when, you know, he's a professional baseball player and he's always been good at one thing, and that's, you know, holding those leads, and now he's not. And, you know, it's either, you know, he's probably frustrated, I'm sure. There's probably a lot of, you know, doubt there, and you put him out there, and I don't know if he's confident that he's going to get the outs that he needs in those situations either anymore. So, you know, maybe all it takes is just starting fresh. I know that's something that Dave Lesky has written about on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. Almost at Pine Tar Press. That's funny.
Mm-hmm. Been a while on that.
Been
one.
A while there. But you know, maybe if that's just something where he can come out and get a fresh start, maybe the Royals can add some different depth to the bullpen, and it doesn't throw him right into the middle of that. Kind of closing sequence, then maybe that is something that he can get back. Lesky's also written about how Soria's slider has kind of abandoned him this season, and he just isn't getting the spin on it by the metrics. And if that's the case, then maybe that's either something that he works on to improve again, or he scraps it and goes to more of a cutter, or maybe he just ditches the whole, you know, slider cutter idea in general and just sticks with curve, change, and fastball. You know, those are things that he can adjust in the off season. So I think until we kind of hear some of those, I wouldn't be completely lost, but I guess to an extent, I think there's probably a rational fan who could express a lot of doubt about him over the next 2 years. I think there's going to be a lot of irrational fans as well who are just like, oh, cut him, just eat the money. But, you know, I think he's probably going to have an opportunity to provide value. And at different points this year, he's pitched very well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he's bad, he's really bad is the issue. And he's been bad in some very notable, important, high leverage situations. And that just amplifies it. Just like we've talked about, you know, last week and in other moments where he's had these kind of bad blown saves and blown leads and blown ties and everything else. So I'm not concerned as far as like losing sleep over two more years on his contract, but it is kind of one of those things that it's like, well, he kind of has to go and reprove it at this stage. And, you know, I don't have the confidence I had. And I was one of the, like, I guess, late adopters to Soria outrage, I suppose. You know, up until somewhere in July where he gave up that home run in Detroit, I was pretty much on the wagon there. And then it was a little shaky. And then after all the other stuff earlier in September, I was like, well, I don't think we can use him in that spot anymore. So I hope he gets it back. But yeah, last night was pretty rough. And he even caught a break for a change. You know, even what was it? A couple of games ago, I think it was against the White Sox. He came in, Royals were up 3-1, and he got an easy ground ball, got exactly what he wanted, and the thing hit the bag for a fair ball. And it's just like, what else is it going to be? He's had stuff go off his foot. He's had misplays by Paulo Orlando in some games. He's had misplay by Paulo Orlando last night. But he had a ball go off his foot, and it rolled right to Eric Hosmer for an out. Okay. Just like, what else is going to happen? He's going to find some way. I think he balked in a run earlier this year, too. Like, that was a thing that could have happened, and it just would have been like, okay, you know, a cursed season. Just chalk it up to that, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'd be surprised if he's in those late game situations. But at the same time, you know, those late game situations don't really mean much the rest of the year, unless the Royals get like an absolutely perfect layout. And I don't think that's going to work out that way.
Yeah, and the stuff about his slider abandoning him makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider, you know, when you look at his pitches, you see what's the problem. Well, you know, he's just leaving the ball over the plate. And anytime you put a, you know, you've got a ball belt high right down the middle of the plate, any major league hitter, no matter who it is going to hit it and hit it far. And that's what's happening. So it really makes a lot of sense that, you know, maybe, I mean, if you have a slider you started in the middle of the plate and it tails away from, you know, a right-handed hitter or vice versa or something, then, you know, that's that kind of move. I mean, Mariano Rivera made his entire career on that, basically. So, you know, you have, if you can do that consistently, which over the course of his career, Soria has been able to do, then you can get a lot of guys out. You can induce weak contact, things like that. But if those metrics are, you know, they're showing that it's kind of abandoning him, and you can see it with his eyes. So it's like, it makes a lot of sense when you really kind of actually, that's one of those things where you kind of say, okay, this is what it looks like. And then someone like Leski goes and digs in and says, okay, this is what's actually happening. And they kind of line up actually. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but, and as you said, there are points where he's had a lot of value this season. And I think, you know, I think we've talked about it before. If you can bring Hochever back, which I think is reasonable, and I think Greg Holland is going to be really cheap if they can get him back. Now, obviously, you know, neither is necessarily going to be 100% healthy, but Hochever was coming off a Tommy John surgery in 2015, and, you know, he was a huge part of their run that season. So it's reasonable to think that Greg Holland in 2017, after coming off of surgery in 20, technically it was in 2015, but missing the 2016 season, that he could easily come back, and especially, you know, mid season really hit his stride and be a big part of the bullpen. So if you can get those guys back, and then you've still got Soria and Herrera and Davis, I mean, then if Soria, instead of becoming, you know, right now with Davis out, he's the second best option they have, or at least he's treated that way, whether he actually is or not. So if you can, if you can say he's your fourth or fifth option out of a bullpen, and that bullpen in particular, then I think you're sitting okay. And if Soria has to come in the sixth inning, even if he blows another lead, you're going to have more time than, you know, last night, bottom of the ninth, walk-off win. You know, the Royals don't have any time to make it up if Soria has a mistake or two.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, and baseball's kind of weird that, like in football, okay, you look at, you know, you take, I don't know if I necessarily want to use this example just because I don't like the person, but Larry Johnson, for example, as a running back, you know, had just a few really great seasons in a row and then just fell off a cliff, and you could see it, you know, you saw it happen, and he was just never the same. He was never a good player after that. And, you know, that's kind of the way the aging curve works. But in baseball, it doesn't work exactly the same, but there's also this kind of weird thing where you can just have kind of lost seasons in baseball. You don't really see that much from other sports outside of an injury. You know, I mean, most of the time in baseball, one player or another, like, it's very rarely you look and you see, you know, that's why obviously kind of sets the Hall of Famers apart when you look at like a George Brett or a Tony Gwynn or, you know, players like that. That consistently, Mariano Rivera, talk to keep it with a reliever discussion, but players that consistently year in and year out have just fantastic seasons every year. You know, just it's so hard to do. So, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, it's just one of those situations where, you know, you say lost season, okay, you know, we saw at times he still had the stuff. We're confident we can put him in a better position next year. You know, I also think Ned Yost has to be honest with himself, and the organization has to be honest with what Soria is. And he's not the guy that he was his first time here. He may not even be the guy that they thought they were signing, but he can still be, as you said, Mike, a very valuable piece moving forward and provide some value to the team if they put him in the right position. So it's up to them, I think, to do that. So it's kind of, you know, you got to meet halfway. Soria's got to get better. He's got to be able to command like he did, you know, previously before this, he had his struggles this season, but the Royals also have to put him in better positions where, you know, things can't necessarily snowball like they have. So,
yeah. And, we'll see. And they have to leave themselves out, you know, in the sense of like an exit strategy with him. I don't know. Like last night was weird. It was, I'm surprised Wade Davis wasn't in there. I mean, I guess, I mean, the book, the way managers manage on the road in that situation is way different. If it's a home game, the Royals, you know, top of the ninth, Wade Davis is going to be in there to try to prevent runs. That's just how it is. It's not Brian Flynn starting. It's not Joaquin Soria later. It's going to be Wade Davis. And I don't know. I think that was a mistake, but, you know, it also kind of seems like they just don't want to use Wade Davis frequently right now. So I don't know if there's something up with that. That's entirely speculation. It just seems like ever since he's come back, they've been very, very tentative with him. So we'll see what happens in the offseason with that and the rest of the 10 and a half games as the Royals are playing right now. So we'll see kind of where that goes. But, you know, Ventura threw a complete game on Monday. The full bullpen was available. It's, you know, Soria being the guy is a little curious given his struggles recently, but you know, if you know, maybe that's Yost trying to get him in a situation where he can get those outs and regain some confidence, or maybe it's just he really doesn't trust other guys. I don't know, but you know, they lost. You move on. You guys just get through this the rest of the season. Hopefully, no serious injuries and you know, see what you can do to kind of get some positive feeling for next year and kind of work towards that, I suppose. And maybe play spoiler, because they do have Detroit and Cleveland in the last, you know, these last couple weeks. So
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Ventura's complete game earlier in the week that freed up the bullpen, so we can kind of use that as a segue to talk about, you know, Soria has been a big negative point basically the entire season for the Royals. Even when he was good, people were still trying to bring him down. And again, as we said last week,
yeah,
at this point, there's really no defense. I'm not defending Soria at this point, but
well, there are some still positives. People that, like, before we get into the positives, there's still people out there who can't forget Herrera's April of 2013, where he gave up like 5 homers in the month and was pretty rough and was fine since, like, dominant since. And he gives up 1 home run the other day against the White Sox, and everybody's like, yep, that's the same old Herrera. I'm like, have you not been paying attention for literally like more than 3 years? Like, that guy is one of the best relievers in baseball for an extended period. Just people don't forget that stuff. They don't forget it until you just overwhelmingly prove otherwise. They do not forget. It's like Dayton Moore. As soon as the Royals fell under 500 this year, everybody's like, oh, nope. You know, that's where the snark comes in. The victory lap of the projection systems comes into play. And it's like, oh, yep, see, it's exactly what we thought. Nah, come on, hold on.
Yeah, it's like I've always said or always thought that, you know, whether it's football or baseball, and football's the first 4 games and baseball's the first 40 games, first quarter of the season essentially, completely decides the narrative on you for whatever that's going to be. And so similar to that, then you've got exactly what you're talking about with Herrera, where, you know, it can possibly be just one key point in a season and people will hit on that, and that will define, for some people, not necessarily everyone, but for some people, that will define the narrative for them. And that's it. Just as you said, you know, Kelvin Herrera, you know, one of the best relievers in baseball, 29 other teams would kill to have him, and 25 would probably have him as their number one closer easy. And he's still got people here that are going to just do exactly what you said and bring up, like, oh, same old Herrera and all this stuff. It's like, oh, same old Herrera, like super dominant, right, amazing, awesome reliever. Oh, okay, that right, that one. Okay,
dominant, gotcha, with 2 pitches, so he just went and got a third because he was bored.
Yeah,
like, know? And made out pitch in less than a season. Ah, no biggie. Whatever.
That stuff happens all the time, right?
Right, that's right. Guy throws upper 90s, but I'm a fully avowed and Kool-Aid drinking Herrera fan too. So.
Right, then you have every reason to be. That's the thing. Like,
yeah, he's awesome.
if we're to have a if you can picture Lady Justice, right, blind to all of the tyranny, and supposed to be equal in all things, holding that scale, it would be tipped incredibly towards your point of view, as in the evidence that supports Herrera being so totally awesome is overwhelming compared to the evidence of Herrera sucks, you know?
Yeah.
So, and maybe, you know, it's just some residual, you know, past Royals fandom where it's like inside every good player is a bad player
just waiting to come
pretending
out.
Just waiting to break out, you know, like inside every Bob Hamlin rookie of the year, there's Bob Hamlin the rest of his career. You know, it's like, uh-huh. I guess I can kind of, that's
on,
reasonable.
On
sorry,
Roa, Steve, Mark Quinn.
My dog absolutely does not like Bob Hamlin. So we are not alone, Royals fans. So anyway, that's kind of funny, but we'll segue back into the good things. There are good things.
Not to derail things, but yeah.
Not to derail. Positives. That never happens here. Never happens.
Right.
Positive things. So, we kind of mentioned it last week. And Kendrys Morales right now has 29 home runs. He has 12 RBIs. The Royals have, 11 games left in the season, counting tonight, which they're currently playing. And and they believe they just took the lead as we're recording, which is unusual because normally
it's usually doom though
when we're recording.
When they take the lead, they blow it in spectacular fashion. As
yes,
we discussed last week.
So maybe Soria will pitch again tonight, and we can keep the streak rolling.
I can guarantee now, it almost this week.
So anyway, 11 games left for Kendrys Morales and the Royals, of course. But so he needs one home run and 12 RBIs to have 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. I mean, how long has it been since there's been a Royal that's put together a season like that?
Well, the 30 home runs hasn't happened since 2000. And that was Jermaine Dye. That was the year where he had like 20 home runs at the All-Star break and started the game. And, you know, just that alone, you know, the Royals don't have a lot of 30 home run seasons. It's, as we've discussed a couple years ago, the Royals have never been a home run hitting team. And even in like the peak home run years, they didn't have much for home runs. Some people will blame that on the stadium, but generally it's just that the Royals don't get those guys. They either don't develop them, they don't acquire them, they don't, you know, they don't find them. It just doesn't happen. Stadium plays a part in that, but mostly it's personnel. But yeah, last time the Royals had a 30 home run hitter, it was Jermaine Dye, who hit 33 in 2000. They came close in 2012 when Billy Butler had 29, and I think he went the whole month of August without hitting a homer. Or maybe he had one. So, I think he probably was trying to hit home runs back then at that point. But anyway, you know, the last time they had a guy with 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, it was Jermaine Dye, which 16 years ago, a while, you know, back in the almost golden age for Royals hitting, or a golden age, but still relatively average compared to the environment.
Yeah.
You know, that was, you know, not to discount the feat at the time, you know, because it's still impressive. But yeah, I mean, Morales, and he drove in a run tonight too. So he's at 89 RBIs and 11 away. He might not have enough time to get to 100, but, you know, the, you know, considering where Morales was in May,
yeah,
29 homers and almost 100 RBIs is pretty impressive.
And an 800 OPS with, you know, hitting 260. I mean, he was hitting like 190 for two months of the season.
He was so bad and almost got cut. Actually, you know, maybe he didn't almost get cut, but, you know, there were questions about it, at least flying around. And
here's,
if it's a valid question, then it's, you know, there's something happening.
So here's his splits here, right? April, March, he hit 226 with a 637 OPS. In May, he hit 163 with a 549 OPS, right? And then he had, let's see, six home runs in those 2 months.
Combined?
And then, yes, combined. And then in June, that was when he just lit everything on fire. He hit 402 with an 1108 OPS. And he had five home runs. He had five home runs at least every month since then. Seven in September, October, and six in August. He had, so, you know, he kind of took a step back in July. He had 191 with a 662 OPS, but then 825 OPS in August, and now he's got a 1094 OPS this month. So he's had 2.5 bad months, and then he's had two incredibly good months, and then one good month, and then half a bad month or half a good month. So, I mean, you know, it's like you said, compared to where he was in May and where he is now, it's quite amazing. And really, I mean, this is more of a statement about the Royals than anything else.
Yeah.
But as far, let's say he gets another home run, say he ends up at 95, 12, I mean, 12 RBIs in 11 games is quite a feat. It's possible.
It's a lot. You're going to have a 3-run homer in one or two of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's,
and some Royals players have, I think the longest RBI consecutive game RBI streak is like 8 games this season or something. Now, I think Morales has had 7. I think he's tied for second. I think him and Hosmer have had both at 7.
Mm-hmm.
But sounds anyway, so let's say he ends up with like 95, right? 30 RBI or 30 home runs and 95 RBIs. I mean, 22 home runs, 106 RBIs last year, 847 OPS. Say he ends the year at like 810 this year with 30 home runs, 95 RBI. I mean, that's got to be one of the best two-year stretches for a Royal slugger. You know, it's probably a top, definitely top 10 in terms of a two-year stretch, I would guess. And again, more of a comment on Royals history than anything else, but I mean, is that semi-accurate?
It's going to be a good 2-year stretch. I don't have them all in front, but I mean, that, you know, you think about the players that would put him around. I mean, Brett obviously had a lot of very good seasons. You know, Willie Wilson had some good years. Hal McRae, Balboni for homers, at least, you know, didn't always hit for average or anything, but he had those homers. Danny Tartable, who's most underrated guy in the team's history, Bo Jackson, Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, Jermaine Dye, Billy Butler, Alex Gordon, a couple of those years. So, yeah, I mean, you put him in league with those kind of guys for like consecutive season stretches. He's kind of in that range. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me to kind of put him in there. John Mayberry, somebody I didn't mention, you know, that's he's right in there with some of those guys who have had, you know, these stretches of being very effective and very productive. And, you know, you look at it, if he does finish in that 94, 95 range, he's going to average 100 RBIs over two seasons, which the Royals, they just don't have a lot of times where they get guys who have more than 100 RBI season. That's, you know, it's pretty rare. They've got 6 players who have ever done that in the team's history. And, wow. You know, even 2 of those, Sweeney and Dye, only did it in the 2 years. So, you know, that kind of puts into perspective. The Royals have never been an offensive juggernaut. I mean, obviously, you look at the home run record for the franchise at 36, still at 36. I mean, it's the only team in baseball that has that, the franchise home run record that for a season under 40 of all of baseball. So,
yeah, I mean, it's especially interesting when you consider, you know, last year the offense was pretty good, but, you know, this year especially, I mean, Hosmer and Morales could both have 100 RBIs, and considering how poorly the offense has played, just from a standpoint of, you know, people have to be on base for you to get an RBI. So, you know, the Royals have just been really bad this year. They've struck out a lot, and they don't walk a lot anyway. So, I mean, how often have the Royals had 2 players that have had 100 RBIs in the same season? If Morales were to get super hot again and make that happen,
if he were to do that, it would be the 6th time in their history that the Royals had two or more players with 100 RBIs in the same season. You know, I mean, obviously Brett has been in there. He was a tandem 2 different times. 79, it was Brett and Daryl Porter, and 88, it was Brett and Danny Tartable. 2002, it was Carlos Beltran and Raul Ibanez. They both drove in 100. Only twice have the Royals had 3 guys drive in 100 RBIs or more. One of those years was 99, when it was Beltran, Dye, and Sweeney, which is one heck of a trio. And then
how those teams weren't better with that, I guess. I mean, obviously
they had zero pitching in a time where you needed some kind of pitching. Yeah, and the next year, Joe Randa was driven 100 runs along with Dye and Sweeney. So, you know, it's just not something that's happened that often. It's really only happened 2 times that the Royals have had a 100 RBI guy at all since 2003. So Billy Butler did that in 2012 and Morales last year. So it's even that stretch from 2003 to 2012 where, you know, they didn't have anybody. So other than Brett, they've really never had that one guy. And even with Brett was, you know, not really a guy who drove in 100 RBIs a ton. You know, he did it, 4 times in his career, which is still impressive. It's just that, you know, he had probably a lot of, like, off the top of my head, probably had a lot of 80 and 90. And Brett also missed a lot of games. So, you know, that's part of it. But there's also that the whole idea that, you know, the Royals just generally have not had guys produce at this level. You know, they've only had 5 different instances where they've had more than one player with 25 home runs or more. And the last time that happened was, you could guess, in 2000, when it was Jermaine Dye and Mike Sweeney. And, you know, the only time they've ever had 2 players hit 30 home runs or more, not that Hosmer's going to get to 30, but, They've only done that once, and that was in 85. So it's just a team that doesn't have that home run history. They don't have a lot of those kind of milestones. And this year they might end up with two guys again who have hit 25 home runs or more in the same season. And if Morales picks it up, they might have two guys have 25 home runs and 100 RBIs, which would be, I think we figured out that's maybe the fifth time that that's happened. Or so it's rare to have that kind of performance. But at the same time, you look at this kind of notable performance from these two guys, and yet the Royals are still in the bottom ranks in runs scored and in run production. And it just goes to show just how much, they run into that kind of issue of, filling out the rest of the lineup, which has been the issue all year long, where you basically have two guys who are hitting all season long. And even then, Morales wasn't good for a couple months. Hosmer wasn't good for a month. So, you got to get those guys in there sustaining it. And they haven't done it.
No.
So it's frustrating, and that's how you end up in a situation where you'd miss the playoffs, and which is probably going to happen. So
inconsistency.
Yeah, it's going to get you pretty much every time.
And look at this. Even when we're talking positive, we get back into the negative. It's supposed to be positive. It's supposed to be bright spots here. We got Hosmer Morales could be 30 home run, 100 RBI buddies. Here's the question.
I have to correct myself. There was only one time where the Royals had 25 homers and 100 RBIs from more than one player, and it was that 2000 season.
There you go.
So it's only happened 16 times that the Royals have a guy hit 25 and drive in 100. So,
jeez.
It's just,
I mean, you've got someone like how many David Ortiz probably done that 16 times in his career.
He probably just does that in his sleep. He could play half a season and do that sometimes.
He's 40 and he's going to hit 40 home runs. So, whatever. But so it's the Royals. We've become used to this. We've become numb to it almost, if you will. But so this is kind of the bigger question here with, if you would have asked in April or May, there would have been like cut Morales. People, like you said, people were saying cut him loose now in the season, let alone don't bring him back next year. But here, should they bring him back next year? And the question is, can you afford not to when you're a team as starved for offense as the Royals and you've got a guy who's a 30 home run, 90 RBI guy, essentially, basically over the last two seasons for you has averaged 25 home runs and 100 RBIs, which is what it'll be. I mean, can you afford to try and fill that role? I mean, you've got, with Moustakas coming back, you've got the opportunity to have kind of an interesting little dynamic DH position with Chester Cuthbert and possibly Hunter Dozier, who's had a few RBIs of his own in his short time up. But and then Salvador Perez, Drew Butera, you can mix and match there to fill in that role and possibly get some production. But even still, I mean, can you afford, if you're the Royals, when you're starved for home runs, you're starved for offense, to let this guy walk?
That's going to be an interesting question for them to answer. And even, as recently as maybe July, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that, they'll probably just let him go. They might, they might be able to extend the qualifying offer to him and just get a draft pick, and they won't worry too much if he goes. But now if he's hit so many home runs down the stretch and you see how good he can be when he's just red hot, they have to kind of think about it. I know that they've said for, going back into like 2013 and 2014, they were talking about how they wanted to be more flexible at DH and be able to give guys days off or half days off. And, when you've got Kane and you've got Sal Perez, guys who, they've done multiple things over the years to preserve Kane for his energy and to save his legs. And Sal Perez plays so much, but you don't want to sit him and lose his bat. So it makes sense to try to use him. And then you've got that, suddenly the third baseman tree has exploded fruitfully. And even though Dozier is playing more outfield now, and he's played the outfield since he's come up, you know, those are still guys that you want to try to find at bats if you think that Dozier can be up here full time. Or, you know, Cuthbert has certainly proven that he can at least handle the job at a replacement level, and even a little bit better than that. So you want to find a way to get those guys into the lineup, and a rotating DH spot is a way to do that. But at the same time, you know, what it would look really weird for the Royals to, like you've mentioned, have this dearth of power and have a guy who averages 100 RBIs in the two seasons that he's with the Royals, and, you know, is a 22 home run season and probably a 30 home run season this year. You just let that guy walk. I don't know. I don't know how they can, even if they really do want to stay or try to be flexible. They said that and they signed Morales anyway before 2015. So, you know, maybe what they say doesn't really matter. But, you know, if they do, if they get the qualifying offer, it's something that, you know, $16.7 million. If he thinks that he can get a contract out there, maybe he rejects that. But at the same time, Morales is one of those guys who rejected the offer before. And in 2013, it came back to bite him. He didn't play in the majors until June. Missed spring training, had a miserable season, did just enough. It was 2014 when he did that. Yeah, getting my things mixed up. So is that something where that experience is going to cause him to accept the qualifying offer? In which case, you're paying almost $17 million for him. Plus, I think they would still have to work out his mutual option, which pays him, I believe it's like $11 million for that. There's going to be a buyout to that as well. So they would have to pay him the buyout plus whatever the qualifying offer was if he's going to take that. So that's a lot of money. You have to be pretty sure it's a $1.5 million buyout. So you'd be looking at, you know, over $18 million for him to be playing for you if he accepts that qualifying offer. He's got a hit. He basically needs to repeat it. Can he do that? Well, maybe. If he's still hitting at this stage, you know, maybe you see a little regression, but maybe not. You know, maybe they work out some kind of deal within all of that noise to maybe add on another option year or give him 2 years and an option year or something. You know, Dave Lesky wrote out a much more detailed piece about this on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, so people should probably check that out. And he's got a much better breakdown of how it fits, especially financially. I think they keep him. I think it's tough to say that we want to contend in 2017 and let a guy who's done this well over 2 years, including a World Series championship season, just go. No matter how flexible you want to be, there is still a certain point where you kind of have to fess up and be like, okay, we can't just let him go. And you just kind of figure out what the money's going to be from there. So I guess that's where I fall. I kind of, you know, the worry would be that he's 33 now. He's not going to get younger. Guys who basically he has only the one skill, you know, is he going to be a guy who can sustain that kind of power late in his career, like Big Poppy and like, you know, other players who have only DH'd? You know, Victor Martinez comes to mind. Maybe. And if so, great. You know, that's awesome. But it is a risk that the Royals have to consider. But then if the floor is like he only hits 20 homers and has 75 RBIs, that's a pretty good year by Royals standards, power-wise, yeah, in a lot of seasons. So maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough. And you just have to kind of deal with the fact that it's going to be a lot of money if that's kind of where he ends up, you know, production-wise.
So let's flip the script a tiny bit. If you say you're no longer the Royals, say you're Kendrys Morales in this situation, if the Royals give you a qualifying offer, and which is like $16.7 million or whatever it is, so yep, if that's your offer, what does it take to get you away from the Royals? Is it just any contract that is more than 1 year? So say you've got a 2 year $20 million contract versus the 1 year $16 million. So obviously the AAV is much higher in just the qualifying offer. But you've got 2 years versus one, and overall it's more money. But then you've also got the opportunity, okay, after the qualifying offer year, if you're good that second year, then, you know, you could possibly get another contract that's just as big, maybe a 2 year contract after that. I mean, where's that point for you, Mike, if you are now Kendrys Morales in this situation?
You know, I think generally players are going to try to go for the years on those kind of things. You know, I don't know if he were to approach it more realistically. I don't remember what he was looking for back in 2014. You know, obviously he was younger, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think if you're comparing 2 years and 20 million, that's tough. You'd probably take the qualifying offer. Though I don't, I guess you'd have to, your agent would have to be sure that was the only other offer, because they can't really talk to him until he's rejected it. So, you know, if you get wind that maybe there's a 3 year, $36 million deal out there, that's probably the way you lean. If it's 2 and 22 or 2 and 26, maybe, you know, but if you want to bet on yourself, take the qualifying offer and try to have another good year, you know, maybe that is where he goes. I don't know. That's a tough question. I don't know how that market would develop. You know, one, he's a DH, so that probably is going to limit him to pretty much American League teams. And now it's American League teams who need a DH. So that would eliminate, well, Boston. I guess Boston's going
to
need a DH.
I was about to say, you've got Boston needing a DH and like Kendrys Morales.
Oh boy. I mean,
he would just
maybe
eat
that
up
maybe
that
that's the place to go.
Yeah, maybe that's actually
maybe that's a spot to look at.
If I'm Morales, I'm telling my agent to get Boston on the phone. Let's make this happen. I want to hit 40 home runs in my career once.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I you know, I don't know. Detroit, I don't know what Martinez's contract situation is, but you know, they're not going to be in the market. Cleveland probably not if they've got Carlos Santana. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it might be something where he does just have to take what he can get. Or at least if he does decline the qualifying offer, he would have to be prepared to take that 2 for 20. Just because he can't get into a situation like he had been, where he has a miserable season because he has, you know, when they signed him, when the Twins signed him in 2014, you know, it's not like they could option him or anything to get him back up to speed. They had to bring him on right away. And so there's no spring training, no nothing. They had to fit him in and make it work. And if he was going to get into game shape, it was going to be literally in games. It wasn't going to be spring training or drills or anything. It was whatever conditioning he had done on his own. And clearly that time off was not good for him because he didn't do anything until like September, when he probably finally got his timing back and, you know, turned that into a good deal with the Royals. And now we're here where, you know, he could have been out of baseball after that season, or at least after maybe, you know, some other team had tried him and he had failed or something. I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't know.
So probably the most important question then in this whole scenario is that we can't answer is, did Kendrys Morales learn his lesson? You know, so Is he willing to hold out again? Or is he in the situation where he says, okay, I'm going to, you know, I sat out before, it didn't work for me, so if I don't have a better offer, I'm taking the Royals offer, and that's where I'm going with this. It could be. You know, I mean, we obviously don't know, and it'll be interesting to see. I'd be interesting to hear if he did take the Royals offer, and I would hope somebody, I mean, they usually have press conferences for these things, but I guess I can't remember the last player that the Royals gave a qualifying offer to that accepted off the top of my head.
It took a couple of years for anybody to do it. It was Colby Rasmus. Rasmus accepted one last year, and I think there's maybe one other player who accepted it, and that was it.
You know, yeah, so I guess I don't know. Turned down. I don't know if the Royals would hold a press conference for that, like a normal free agent signing.
Yeah, I mean, it is a contract.
Regardless of whether they would, then at some point I'd want somebody to ask the question of, you know, did you, was your previous experience of holding out and having a rough season a factor? Because, you know, I think it would be for me, you know, but like you said, if you, you know, then again, there's also the side where you say, okay, if you're a professional athlete, there's that level of confidence you have to have in yourself where, like you said earlier, I'm betting on myself in this scenario. Mm-hmm. And so if you're Morales, you're comfortable with yourself that you're going to say, you know what, I can sit out because I'm good enough to not worry about it. So, you know, it didn't work out last time, but, you know, maybe push that aside and you say it's going to work this time. It'll be just fine. So who knows?
Yeah. It may end up being one of those things where he would turn it down and just be very prepared to take whatever looked like the best offer when it looked like the best offer and not hold out for X years and X dollars, which has, you know, stung him then and stung other guys. Ervin Santana comes to mind, you know, where they just kind of end up, they have to take whatever they can get because otherwise it's going to impact them in, you know, later parts of the season, which, you know, that can really set someone back. So I don't know. I think his previous experience definitely makes it more likely he would take a qualifying offer. Now it's up to if the Royals would offer that. I would lean definitely yes, but I think that they would also want to probably try to make out some kind of way that they can negotiate a lower value deal that maybe adds on a year or maybe two to just keep him, but not necessarily at such a high price for a season. So, you know, but if
that would seem like the most reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, if it comes to it and they just, he takes the offer, well, there it is. They probably wouldn't negotiate from there, but maybe they would. Certainly once they got close to the season, they probably wouldn't do any negotiating or anything. They just, the Royals just don't do that, where they come up with those kind of deals mid season or in season generally. I think Jeff Francoeur was the last guy that they did that, I think.
Oh, Jeff Francoeur.
Like mid to late, like later part of 2011, they signed him to some deal or whatever. But anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
speaking
of betting on yourself or themselves in this case, because I'm not betting on myself in terms of how my performance will be next year for the Royals, but
I would bet pretty poor, no offense.
Yes, none taken. We'll end on this note, but talking about betting on yourself, this topic of Danny Duffy has come up. So I hear Mike Boddicker a lot on 8:10 in the mornings, okay? And when Duffy was having this really, really hot stretch, Boddicker, everyone was like, pay the money, get him, keep him here for a long time. And Boddicker was like, you know, I don't want to pay him the money, or I wouldn't pay him the money. I would say wait, obviously, but until he has a couple rough starts and see if he can dig himself out of it and come back and get back to being more a dominant starter. Mm-hmm. And then you can say, okay, because, you know, pitchers, he goes, some of the worst pitchers will have hot streaks like that where they just go a couple months and they're really good. Lou Kochever had him back when he was still a starter. So it's not unreasonable. His point is well made. But Duffy had a couple rough starts. You know, he had one start to give like four runs or something in six innings. And, you know, the strikeout numbers continued to be there. But he had some starts where he gave up some runs, gave up a few home runs. Yep, but
that Boston game was a rough one.
Yep. But his last two or three starts now, he's back to form, if you will. Not quite at the peak of his most dominant. I'm gonna pull up his stats here for his last few games to see, so we can speak eloquently on this matter.
Right. While you're looking those up, he's already set the Royals left-handed pitcher record for strikeouts in a season. In fact, he has crushed it because the previous record was 156 in a season, and it was in the Royals' inaugural season of 1969. So Duffy's struck out 181 guys. Bill Butler, not that Bill Butler, different Bill Butler.
Not that Bill
Butler. Struck out 156, and really only two other guys in Royals history from the left side of the mound have struck out more than 150, and they were both in 1987 for the other two. It was Danny Jackson and Charlie Liebrandt. So he's way up there. He's approaching 200 strikeouts. He's got about two starts. The Royals, maybe if he's close, they might throw him on the last day for a couple innings to see if he can get some strikeouts. But he's 19 away. He's got two starts. If he gets 19 more strikeouts, he's at 200 for the season, which would be only the fifth time that the Royals have had a 200 strikeout guy, last achieved in 2009 by Zach Greinke, who had a pretty good year that year.
It was all right.
Yeah.
So since Duffy was back in the rotation, right, his first start back in the rotation, obviously an abbreviated one, on May 15th, he pitched three innings. So give him the first couple games to get back up to speed. He gave up five earned runs in his third start. But then after that, he's had, let's see, 22. He had 15 consecutive starts where overall he had a 2.5 ERA with 113 strikeouts to 22 walks, right? So over 108 innings pitched.
I can't believe that's Danny Duffy.
Right? Just an unbelievable stretch there. He only gave up more than three earned runs one time in that stretch. So pretty impressive. And then after that, he had a game, just an awful game, the one you're talking about in Boston. He gave up seven earned runs, only five innings pitched. The next game, he came out and gave up four earned runs in 5.2 innings pitched. So there you've got 10.2 innings pitched, giving up 11 runs.
Yeah.
And let's see, he only had 10 strikeouts total. I say only, that's still a nine, you know, just under nine strikeouts per nine innings. So that's still pretty good. But for Danny Duffy, you know, what he had been doing, including a 16 strikeout performance earlier in the month, wasn't that great. But he snapped back. He's had three straight appearances. He's pitched six innings, 7.1, seven innings, given up no more than three runs, and had a total of 24 strikeouts between the three games. So that's 20.1 innings and 24 strikeouts. You know, his
seems pretty good.
So he's kind of bounced back, and the whole point of that was saying that some good observations when it comes to pitching, but he can be a little bit curmudgeon-y on the radio, and he'll admit as much on the radio. He's an old school guy, and that's how he likes to do things. But point being, at this point, after Duffy's last start, even he said, "Pay the dude, give him his money."
Pay that man his money.
Give him his money. Yes. Nice.
Pay him.
Pay him. He beat me.
Don't get me started on quoting Rounders. I've watched that movie probably 200 times during the big poker boom.
Oh, I remember that, dude. I remember the poker boom.
Oh, man.
In college, we'd pop that movie in and we'd play poker. Oh, my God.
Anyway. Check.
He'd throw.
Okay.
Stick it in you last time. Okay. That was too far. Too far. All right.
Danny Duffy.
Danny Duffy, yes. That was 100. He's at 169.2 innings, career high.
Yeah.
And like you said, could be he's – it's not not unreasonable to think he's got two starts left, right? Two or three? Three? Two?
Should be two. You know, just there's just not enough games to get him a third start, but the last game of the year would be like he'd have 2 days rest behind him, I think. So it could theoretically be a throw day anyway. So he might be, you know, in the last start of the game. You know,
if he's got 198 strikeouts,
they're putting him out there.
Yeah.
He's going to throw an inning and they're going to tell him, if you got to throw 25 and nibble to get him to chase, go do it. You know, yeah. Just like
get you 200 strikeouts.
Yeah. Go get it.
But let's say he goes, you know, what has we've come accustomed to having, you know, 6 2/3, seven innings in both these starts and, you know, eight strikeouts. I would put him at 197 for the season. So let's say he comes in and gets the three strikeouts in two innings in the last game of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at, let's see, 14, that'd be 183, call it 184 innings and 200 strikeouts. And then, you know, an ERA under 3.2. I mean, there's people have been talking about Cy Young consideration. I don't think that's an ERA that will get you much. You know, back when he was floating in that 2.6 ERA area, that was, you know, you definitely definitely could see it happening from that, but I don't think 3.8 gets you many. He might get a couple stray votes, but I think he's primed for possibly next year. He's going to have that buzz about him. So, I mean, you think, and, you know, you talked about Ventura having a complete game, and his strikeout numbers have kind of just fallen off a cliff. So he hasn't been as impressive, but he's starting to, you almost kind of feel like he's going through what Danny Duffy did, where, you know, Danny Duffy had a period of time where his strikeout numbers weren't as high as we talked about it this year. You know, the strikeout numbers weren't there, but he was becoming more efficient. He was learning how to pitch. It almost kind of feels like, I haven't seen all of his starts recently, Yordano Ventura's, but it almost kind of feels like he's going through that same phase. Time will tell, of course. So, you know, Royals gave him a new contract recently already, but you think they, do you think they reach a deal with Danny Duffy? We'll make this our last topic, but do you think they reach a deal with Danny Duffy this offseason, or do you think he bets on himself and goes for the open market?
I think he would. I think he wants a deal with the Royals. I think he wants to stay in Kansas City. I think the Royals would want him too. You know, the Royals, their pattern is generally once they kind of recognize, once a player has shown them what they want to see, and it's within reason to go do it, they'll get that extension done. I mean, we saw it with Dayton Moore's been great at this. You know, they got Soria, you know, back when in his peak years, they got him extended. They did so with Billy Butler. They got Alex Gordon. They got Zach Greinke. I said Billy Butler. Yeah. Sal Perez, notably, Alcides Escobar was another one, Ventura. So these are all guys that once they kind of got to that point and they were receptive to that extension, the Royals got it done. And I think Duffy, more than probably any of those guys, wants to stay here. I mean, this is it's an organization that stuck with him and his difficulties back in, was it 2010 when he stepped away? They stuck with him, got him through Tommy John surgery. He's had, you know, various ups and downs. They've kept the faith with him. They've worked with him, and they've seen him blossom into a guy that this year has broken out. And, you know, I think it's definitely the timing would be right, I think, for him to cash in on that. Because if he goes in and it's April next year and he struggles right away and maybe he's chasing that success the rest of the year, by the end of the year, you know, because, again, the Royals probably wouldn't do anything within the year. You know, he's basically just hoping that the ship can be righted at that stage. So I think this is the off season to do it. I don't know what the numbers would figure out. I mean, people have said 100 million, people have said 25 million. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to work out to. I would say it's probably going to be a little below market value just because he does want to stay. But he's shown enough. I mean, his floor, worst case, you're going to have a guy who can probably throw 70 innings out of the bullpen and be dominant. And best case, he can be at least your number one starter and possibly one of those kind of ace guys or top 10 in the AL type of guys. So I think it gets done. I think both sides want to have it done. I think he's primed to be in a position to be their number one starter for a couple of years if they can get the money to figure out. And I'm pretty sure they'll find a way to do that. That's just a hunch.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, only because I think you have you rattled off a lot of names, and they even I would agree. I think Danny Duffy probably wants to be here more than any of them. Maybe it's hard to tell with the situation like Alex Gordon last year, because we don't know how hard he's such a reserved guy and so kind of plays it close to the vest with the media, says all the right things, that type of a thing. So we don't really know. And it was hard to gauge how much he was pushing to come back to Kansas City. I know there was some, but I know he also wanted to maximize his potential and his earnings. And of course, you know, why wouldn't you? But I definitely think there's a lot of motivation on both sides to make sure Danny Duffy is here for the foreseeable future. It's just a question, like you said, can the Royals make it work? And do the Royals truly believe the Royals want Danny Duffy back as a person, as a teammate, and on some levels, of course, as a player, but you know, do the Royals truly believe he's worth that leap to give, you know, 5 years, $80 million. That was a number we threw out earlier in the season when he started playing and started pitching really well. You know, is that, are they ready to throw out that kind of coin for someone like him who, you know, he's had his inconsistencies in the past. So, I mean, are you that certain on him? You know, it's just, that'll be the kind of big thing in the offseason, really, to see.
Yeah.
Can they work out a deal? I mean, if they don't, then, man, it's going to be a big mass exodus next year. I mean, even if they get, say they bring back Morales, right, but they don't get anybody else back. I mean, we talked about this ad nauseum, I feel, but it's just, it still is quite amazing. I mean, literally the whole last few years, we said the greatest asset the Royals have had is that they know who the lineup is going to be opening day. Well, 2018, they'd have no clue. We can talk about that. We got all next year to really talk about that if that's the case. But hopefully we're talking about the Royals winning another, you know, getting another playoff run and winning another division title and all that. But we'll see. Anyway, I don't know. That's what I'm most excited to see this offseason is, are the Royals going to go full on the Danny Duffy train, or are they going to take the wait and see? Or maybe, you know, they just can't get anything worked out and they're just going to have to ride it out. That'll be interesting.
I don't know. And then the timing of it would be like, would they do it earlier in the offseason and just get it out of the way and know what they're going to have lined up over the next X amount of years? Or do they wait till everything settles in and then do it? You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And maybe Duffy's curious about that too. See if they go sign some guy, some other starter or some other player for like 3 or 4 years. And Duffy could then know that, okay, part of this deal they want me to sign, I'm going to have this guy around too. So I don't know. But I think he's definitely somebody who wants to be around. You know, the bury me a royal thing from a few years ago was as legit, as sincere, I think, as you can probably get from a ball player in many cases. So, you know, it just seems like he wants to be here. I think they'll figure something out. I have no idea what the money's going to be, though. He could surprise and just be like, yeah, fine, what, you know, just hand them a piece of paper and have them fill it out. I don't know. You know, or yeah. maybe he holds out and they want to pay up. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what it ends up falling under. And we'll definitely, I'm sure, at other points in this offseason, we'll maybe re-explore that just to put some real numbers behind it and see if there's maybe a comparison or a similar player out there who signed a similar kind of deal or something.
Yeah, and at the very least, if, you know, say worst-case scenario happens and Royals don't sign any of these guys back, you know, still won a World Series, but I'll also be – it'll be kind of fun – be the first time in a while, really, that Royals have from their own farm system gotten good players and they've gone to free agency. You know, it's been a while since we've really seen that. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It'd be kind of fun to see the contract that a Hosmer would get or a Danny Duffy would get on the open market. You know, like obviously Alex Gordon went to full free agency last year. That's probably the closest, but there's a different buzz about a guy like Eric Hosmer and there would be about a guy like Danny Duffy going into the, you know, if Alex Gordon was, you know, 5 years younger, of course, then there probably would have been that buzz too, or I guess not five, but 3 years younger, there would have been a much bigger buzz. But, so, you know, it'll be, at the very least, that'd be kind of interesting, but, it's
plenty of time to get there.
Yes. And we'll be here all off season to talk about anything as the, it appears we'll be, having off season podcasts in October for the first time in 2 years.
Yeah.
Unless the Royals, and again, can't ever count them out, I suppose. But as I just see as my Twitter feed scrolls by that the Royals have lost the lead yet again. So
well,
maybe this time it actually is happening. You know, I think they'll still, got a really good shot at anything with a winning record. I think it's going to happen. So, I mean, that'd be 4 consecutive years with a winning record hasn't happened to this organization since the 70s/early 80s. So, I mean,
yeah, in the peak.
Yeah, the golden era of Royals. This is essentially the second golden era of Royals baseball that we're living through. So, I mean, that's pretty cool for some perspective right there. Hopefully, you know, we've got some cool things to talk about this offseason, like a Danny Duffy or something. And, you know, we've heard whispers of I would be surprising, but don't be shocked if for next year, maybe Glass even opens up the payroll a little bit more because he got a taste of that winning. He really liked it. Wants this team to win even more. Knows the new TV deals coming down the pike. Has had a ton of money off the last couple of seasons with the playoff runs. So, you know, could the Royals jump up their payroll to $150 million? I don't know. That seems a little high to me, but $130 probably seems like it's reasonable. And that would put them in the top half of the league. So
that hasn't happened since like 1990.
Yeah. Since Ewan Kauffman was still alive.
Back then it was Mark Davis who signed for like 3 years and $20 million or something. Maybe it wasn't even that much. It was just
that sounds high for even then.
For 90, yeah. It was 3 years and
$10 million maybe.
I don't remember what it was. But he had the biggest contract at the time. Which is remarkable that it was the Royals who had it, and he sucked terribly. God, just the pain of 1990. God dang.
Don't do it to yourself. We're being this is a positive part of the show. Why would you do that? Why would you bring that up right now? I told you we were being positive in this part
of
the
show. I don't know. Old habits.
Old habits. They die hard indeed, as do the Royals, as they still, you know. There's still some fight in them, so hopefully there's some fun things to see as we wind this season down, and we'll have plenty to talk about this offseason with possible impending contracts, rising team payroll, and possible free agent acquisitions, hot stove talks, trades. You know, there'll be plenty of things going on. So stick with us throughout the offseason, because tell you what, we'll be here. That's for sure. And you should also stick with in the off season, Kelly's Westport Inn, our lovely sponsors, because they're awesome and they're fun. I'll probably, my friend is getting married, so we'll probably head to Westport at some point this weekend. Got a lot of friends coming in town, and I'm sure Kelly's will be accommodating. So
that's what they always do.
That is exactly what they do. Yep. So we couldn't do it without them. We also couldn't do it without you guys, our listeners. Thank you so much for listening. Cannot express enough how much we appreciate all you guys listening, responding on Twitter, sending us emails and everything. Love to hear from you guys. Keep it going throughout the off season. Always good. We'll be here doing our thing on the podcast all off season. And you know, as we continue living in the golden age of Royals baseball, second golden age,
second wave.
This is we've passed the Jurassic period of the Golden Age, and we're into the Cretaceous, perhaps. I don't know.
I don't know what order they go in.
We never make things up on this show.
Sounds fine to me.
Sounds good. We'll go with that. All right. So
I can't refute it. So we'll
there you go. So stick with us all off season. We'll be here talking Royals. So there'll still be plenty to talk about. But thank you so much for listening. We so greatly appreciate it. So until next time, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here. And that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.